Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of the day for the 4th of Sivan. We begin with thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Bromwich, David Hachazer, for posting the shiurim online. 4th of Sivan, we're going to see a tshuva from Shut Shevet HaLevi, Rav Shmuel HaLevi Vosner, from the 6th volume, Simon Samach Tet. He was born in 1913 and lived an extremely long life, passing away in 2015. He's a prominent Haredi Rav and Posek, living in Bnei Brak. Okay, so we're going to see him. Now, I want to introduce this from the 4th of Sivan of Tovshin Dalet Mem of 1984. And I want to preface it by noting that I am, you know, in very few ways linked to what we call the Haredi world, whatever the right term for that would be. Haredi is a term that sort of, anyway, whatever you're going to call that world, the right-wing world, the Haredi world, let's say Haredi world, that's the way people know it. So I'm not really a member of that world because of various issues that aren't important to this project. But I remember when I was a young student, maybe around 1984, maybe a little before, Rav Lichtenstein, my Rishivin Shivat Haritzon, Zecher Zadli Bracha, gave a talk at YU entitled Tolerance on the Right and Tolerance on the Left. So the tolerance on the left part is not relevant to what we talk about at all, but the tolerance on the right part was to remember that for all that there are problems that we in whatever the world he would define it as, let's say the Hezder world or the Tilumi world, have some issues with the people on the what we call the right or in the Haredi world, that they have much going for them in many ways. And he spoke about dedication to Torah study, dedication to mitzvot, the mitzvot we could learn from them for all that there are tensions with them as well. One of the issues that I also think comes up often for me in thinking about the difference between those worlds is that there are times when there are halakhic issues that arise that have no ideological component to them as far as I can tell, or no, there's no element of it that makes either a Haredi halakha or not a Haredi halakha. It's just a halakha, but that seems to have gone by the wayside, and then that some in the Haredi world would promote observing. And then the question becomes, if you're going to not observe it the way that they suggest to observe it, why not? And there, a burden of proof comes into play. And I think that Rav Vosner here points out a set of halachot that produce some kind of a burden of proof that is at least worth thinking about, not just ignoring. So the issue, and that's the context in which I found it so interesting, and therefore I'm actually going to step a little bit outside my usual practice. I'm going to track down some of the halachic issues that he raises in the original sources, that we think about them and how we might think about handling them slightly differently from what he recommends, just because I think he's raised such an important issue that otherwise can be tend to be ignored. So, on the 4th of Sivan, Tovshin Dalet Mem, in part 6, response number 69, he was asked about the prohibition against hearing music, musical instruments. Why is there a prohibition against hearing musical instruments? So he points out that the Rambam, in the 5th chapter of Hilchot Ta'anit, Halacha Yudalit, paragraph number 14, is listing some of the ways that Chazal, in the time of the Chorban, the time of the destruction, promoted or prescribed for observing that Chorban. So an underlying issue of this whole discussion will be, when we live in a world that has not yet seen the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash, not yet seen the rebuilding of the Temple, how do we keep that alive for ourselves, other than Tisha B'Av, right? Other than specific practices or specific days that are set aside for noting those losses in our lives? Chazal very clearly in the time of the Gemara prescribed ways that it was supposed to affect our lives day to day. There is a siman of Shulchan Aruch, Taf Kuf Samach, that lists many such practices. And the truth is that almost all of those practices are now observed more in the breach than in the observance of them. And that, I think, is an interesting and important question, because it gets at the issue of, are we keeping alive the memory and the hope for and the desire for the Beit HaMikdash as much as we should be? A couple of years ago, and I try to remember to this best I can, I published a book called Murderer in the Mikdash, which was an attempt to imagine a world in which the Beit HaMikdash had been rebuilt, and I really saw it as part of, if we're going to long for the Beit HaMikdash, we should even start to imagine it. One of the things that started us on the path to a renewed settlement of the Jewish people in Eretz Israel, the State of Israel, and all things we have, one of the things that happened that started that was imagining that it could be possible. And I think that imagining it could be possible is an important piece of that. And part of that Chazal held was that we do certain things. So this Rambam that Rav Ozer is quoting in Shut Shevet HaLevi is V'chein Gazru Shelo Nagein B'Klei Shir. Part of the Gezerah, part of the decree, was not to play musical instruments, V'chol Minei Zemer, and all kinds of songs, V'chol Mashmi'ei Kol Shel Shir, and all things that give a sound, a musical sound, because of the Chorban. So That's the Rambam's understanding of the Gemara. We're not going to go back to the Gemara and check up on the Rambam. This is the Rambam's position. On this particular issue, the Rambam happens to be a machmir, has to be fairly stringent, as we'll see as we go through the halacha. But that's the halacha that Rav Ozner is choosing to quote. Va'afilu shira bepeh al hayayin asura. And even to sing songs, we probably mean non-Jewish songs here. We'll get to Jewish songs a little bit later. If there's wine present, that's also prohibited, meaning a wine occasion might be allowed, but a wine occasion with song is too much of a celebration, too much of a simcha. It's not allowed as part of our mourning over the Churban, over the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. We don't allow ourselves that pleasure. We get it from a pasuk in Yeshaya, where Yeshaya says, Bashir lo yishtu yayin, that a marker of being in mourning, of being not at our full happiness, would be that even when you're singing, that when you're singing, you don't drink wine. So that's the Rambam that he quotes. And he says, Rav Ozner says, Shushet HaLevi, he says, Kvar Katavti, and I wrote an earlier volume of Shushet HaLevi, the Misefa Shalohi Tirak Shirah Peh Shaloh Aliyayin, when the Rambam permits only singing songs without wine around, makes it hard to understand the beginning of the halacha, where he says any forms of musical instrument and any things that make a sound. If he's already told you you can't even sing if there's wine around, why does it tell you you can't play any kind of musical instruments? And therefore, he thinks Rav Ozner understands the Rambam. I'm not going to question this. I'm not saying it's the only way to read it, but Rav Ozner's reading of the Rambam is that all things that make a noise that can be construed as musical cannot be used for that purpose, even if that's not their purpose. So if I can find a way to use a hammer, but use that hammer, you know, if you think about the thing that comes to mind, the image that comes to mind, stomp. So in stomps, they use various instruments to make rhythmic sounds that are not drums at all. They turn them into drums for the moment. Rav Ozner is saying that he thinks that's what the Rambam meant by that. You can't even use other things to make a sound that can be construed as musical. And then from the Rambam, also writing that both things that make a sound are prohibited, and then also that hearing music is prohibited because of the Churban. He understands the Rambam to mean that the prohibition is both on the instrument itself, you can't play such instruments, and also on the listening. So if I'm walking down the street and people are playing musical instruments, Rav Ozner seems to think, the Rambam would seem to think, that we're not allowed to do that. But nafka mina, Rav Ozner says, and he thinks where that applies is to the radio. Right? So let's say somebody says, Degam, this is where the Haredi element in Rav Ozner's life comes into play. Says, Degami shetoe umatir la'atzmo lachziko beveito avur inyanei mischar v'chadashot. Even somebody who wrongly thinks, meaning Rav Ozner thinks that radio is usher, radio is prohibited, I'm not getting into that, and that's not our topic, so we don't have to get into it. But Rav Ozner thinks radio is prohibited, presumably because he thinks that radio and, of course, television and other forms of contact with the outside world will necessarily bring with them prohibited ideas and prohibited seeing or hearing things that aren't prohibited. So let's say somebody says, but I'm only going to use it for the news and for business purposes, right? That's the claim that people make about television. People can make it about the internet. But yeah, that's within the Haredi world, meaning, not that that's our topic, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but one of the differences between the Haredi world and the non-Haredi world would be in their approach to outside influences. Now, I think wrongly, some people we might call the centrist or modern Orthodox world think that that means that the Haredi world thinks it's all treif and we think it's all fine, and therefore it's okay. I think that's untrue. There are clearly many, many parts of the non-Orthodox world, of the world at large, that bring ideas and images that are problematic for Jews, for Orthodox, for observant Jews, for Jews geared about Torah and mitzvot, and Kadosh Baruch Hu, what Hashem wants of them, that are clearly problematic for such Jews, and that's not the issue at hand. The issue at hand probably is more things like, to what extent are we able to ignore certain things and therefore take, you know, as they say about, it's maybe not the best comparison, but they say about Acher, but Elisha ben Avuya was a, and Rav Meir studied with this heretic, Elisha ben Avuya, that Rav Meir was able to take the seeds and throw away the rind of the pomegranate. So I think to some extent, the modern or centrist world claims that we have some ability to do that as well. I think it's an interesting question as to whether we actually do. But Rav Ozner's perspective is, you shouldn't have any of that stuff around because it's all going to produce things that are problematic and so problematic that you can't get into it at all. But let's suppose you have come to think that if you only use it for, you know, it'd be like, I used to have relatives who had a TV, but they only used it for videos for the kids, and the videos they had for the kids were of the kind that were clearly acceptable and proper and appropriate. So that would be something like this as well. You can have a radio and only listen to the permissible stuff on the radio. But here's where it comes to the problem. During the news or during the business reports, there's song or music in between. And Rav Ozner says you can't listen to that. It's clearly prohibited by virtue of this Rambam. He says, I saw a sefer called Shari B'Metzuyanim B'Halacha, which is a set of halakhic works that I think came out in the 1950s. The author was a Rav Shlomo Zalman Brown, who had been a Rav in Budapest, I think, before the war, and then moved. It was in Brownsville. And his grandson today, as far as I can tell from the internet, is on the Beis Din, was a Rav in Sydney, Australia for a while, and now is a Rav of the Beis Din in Crown Heights. So this is a Chabad family. So the Shari Mutzian Ba'alacha, he had said that the radio, when you're going to use it for news and things like that, and you can't avoid the music in between. He said, this Brown in Rishon LeZion, he said that Lina Bata Rov Tashmisho. He said you can follow the majority of its use, which is an interesting claim. Meaning the Rav Osner is saying you can't listen to music anywhere whatsoever, you can't hear music. So if you can't hear music, you can't hear music. But this Rav Brown in the Shari Mutzian Bahalacha was claiming that it's really a matter of the instrument itself, and you don't have to think of this as an instrument of music if you're only using it for news and business use. Problem with that claim is, so says Rav Oshner, it's very to him, because it's not the clef that I'm worried about, it's not the instrument that I'm worried about, because I just showed you, he claims, Rav Oshner thinks, I showed you from the Rambam that it's a matter of playing a musical instrument, but it's also a matter of hearing music, and hearing music is a problem. So you got musical interludes in between the news stories, you can't listen to them. So the fact that you can't avoid it, so you can't avoid it. So it means you're not being mechaving to the issue, but I think he thinks it's still prohibited and a problem. And then through Mr. Brown, it said it's sort of like, in other cases, we also go by the majority use of an item, such as Hechsher Kalim. When it comes to, if you want to know how to remove prohibited material from within a cooking pot, let's say, or a dish that's been used for non-kosher material, it depends on the majority of its use. But if it's one time, so it's much easier, for example, to kosher a pot that's used in general over fire with water, as opposed to one that's only used for roasting. For roasting, you, without any fire involved, without any water involved, you'd have to heat it to red hot, you have to libun. So that's a much harder process. So what if you one time did that? So the answer is we halakhically assume that you can follow the majority use of the place. So he had said the same thing about the radio. If you majority use it for non-musical purposes, you don't have to think of it as a musical instrument. So Rav Moser just says, the whole proof, I don't get it. You don't have to pay attention to that, but there's no reason to answer that because it's not relevant. And I think what he's saying is, the questions of kashrus are completely different, or hagalah, or kashering, are completely different. And he says, so then the Ramah also has halacha in Tav Kuf Samach that we'll get to in a second. We'll read it ourselves in a second. But the Ramah, and this is a kula of the Ramahs, this is a leniency of the Ramahs, he says there are those who say that when the Chazal spoke about a person not hearing music in the aftermath of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, that maybe that was only about, there are those who say that was only about the people who are used to having music around all the time, such as kings. When they wake up in the morning, when they go down at night, and when they go to sleep at night, they have musical accompaniment, they have a band, they have, court musicians, right? Or, let's say also, in a Beit Mishteh, in a place of festivity, let's say a live band in a bar, I think is an excellent example and a problematic example, right? So that could be the only places, the only situations where you have to have it. So, but then Rav Osner says, and this thing to think about, this is an interpretational issue, but not an obviously wrong one. He says, V'davar pashutu, didan shinit rabu kokacha klei shir shizeni karagil. In our times, when everybody hears music all the time, that fits the Ramah's standard of ragil, of it being a common part of your life. As you know, if you look, people who have radios, people who have things, musical instruments with them, musical players of various sorts in them, they have them all the time. Right? Especially there are people who, I know people who have the radio on all night as a company so that it helps them sleep. But especially people, the first thing they do in the morning, they turn on the radio, right? And they turn it on to a music station, right? So that, says Rav Osner, should fit the Ramah's standard exactly and perfectly. Especially they have it at the meal, they have it at night. So he thinks, therefore, Rav Osner, that's completely prohibited al pi halacha. Right? That's what he argues. Luma'aseh, he says, leboshtenu, to our embarrassment and our distress, this whole halacha seems to be completely forgotten, and ve'ein lanu limud zchut gamur, and I don't have any real way to to justify what people are doing. I don't understand it. And these are, you know, people in his Haredi world. He's saying people aren't observing this. So I have to say, first of all, I think that whole chapter in Shulchan Aruch is largely unobserved. Some of the pieces of it are observed here and there, but a lot of it is gone by the wayside. And it's an issue. I sort of sympathetic to the complaint of Rav Moshe, because it's an issue because it weakens the extent to which we really are in mourning for the Beit HaMikdash in ways that Chazal wanted. Let's recall that this whole set of practices that we have stems from a Gemara that talks about the fact that in the aftermath of the Churban, when the Churban happened, when the destruction happened, there was who wanted to basically stop life completely. They wanted to never have meat again. They wanted to never have wine again. And the moderate position that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai suggested then was, you can't give up everything, so you give up some things and you do some things to remember the Churban at all times. One that has stuck, that we still do, is we put ashes on the head of a chatan, on the head of a bridegroom at his wedding. So that's one thing that we do. But the question is, do we really maintain that sense of loss and that sense of desire for the Beit HaMikdash? And I think that's a serious problem. That's not a Haredi issue or a modern Orthodox issue. It's just a Torah and Mitzvos issue. The Chazal were very clear. Now, Rav Moshe's understanding is, and this is where it can become questionable a little bit, Rav Moshe's understanding is that what Chazal wanted, or at least according to the Rambam, and he doesn't quote other poskim, which I think is, he quotes just that Rambam that we'll see in a second. But his understanding basically is that Chazal wanted us to live lives that were largely devoid of music. And they should be largely devoid of music, he would say, because music brings a certain kind of a joy, and we are not allowed to have that joy if we live in a world without a Beit HaMikdash. We can sing songs, maybe, without wine, or we can sing songs without wine, but to have musical, it has to all be a cappella, as it were, and other than that, it can't. Now, that's a remarkable stand to take, especially in a world where, in the Haredi world, Jewish music with musicians is an important part of how they entertain themselves, because they're giving up on all the other forms of music, on all the non-Jewish forms of music, because they think those non-Jewish forms of music all bring, and I can guarantee that at least some of them bring, deep problems to those who listen to them in terms of their observance of Judaism, in terms of their awareness of various prohibitions. So that's the claim. So, but you see what an issue is. He says, I really don't understand it. That's where everyone understands. So I want to just briefly look at some of the sources and some of the other approaches of people who are contemporaries of Rav Voshner's in terms of trying to see where we can go with this problem. And then we'll get back to the rest of Rav Voshner's tshuva, Rav Voshner's response to himself. So in Or HaChaim, Tav Kuf Samach, the first paragraph starts with the words, Mishachar Beit HaMikdash, when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, Chazal were mitakein, Tiknu Chachamim, they set up ordinances, they set up decrees of that generation to tell us various things we should do in memory of the Beit HaMikdash. So the third paragraph there is, V'chein gazu shelo l'nakein b'chlei shir, they also said not to play musical instruments, and V'chol minei zemer, and anything that creates music, V'chol mashmiei kol shel shir, l'sameh apem, and anything that makes music to create happiness. That's the Shulchan Aruch's position, and it seems to follow the Rambam's severe or strict position. So for Sfaradim today, that would be an issue to think about. We'll get to Yerech Chavadat, Rav Yosef, in a second, but that would be something to think about. The Rambam there says, as the Rav Azur said, V'yeshamrim, dafka mishiragil behem. It's only for people who are accustomed to it. Go'onam lachim shamdim v'shachvim b'klei shir, like the kings who get up and go to sleep with musical accompaniment, or you have it in a Beit Mishteh, you have it in a festivities room of some sort, back to the Shulchan Aruch, v'asur l'shamam, and you can't hear it in the Korban. Then he says, v'afilu b'shir b'pelayayin, like the Rambam said, even just oral singing, if there's wine or drink around, that's a problem, because the Pasuk in Yeshayahu is in Chaf Dalet, chapter 24, verse 9 of Isaiah, v'ashir l'yishtu yayin, you can't sing when you have wine, as a sample, as an example, or as a way of expressing mourning. But the Shulchan Aruch says the Jewish custom has become to say words of praise or songs of thanks or recollections of the kindnesses of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even with wine there. And the Ramah adds, V'chein l'tzorach mitzvah. So too, if you have a mitzvah like a chasan and a kala, all of that will be allowed. So if you leave it at the Shulchan Aruch, you have a situation where the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam say that basically musical instruments aren't prohibited. The Rambam has a big loophole, it would seem, that it only applies really to places where music is commonly played, like a bar, like a place of festivities, you know, like a concert hall. And another loophole is that if you're a king, right? And another loophole is that you can drink without wine there. You can have oral singing to praise or thank Hashem and for various things, and maybe also at a chassid and a kala, there it seems like hakol shari, like everything's allowed, including musical instruments, which is part of why today Jewish weddings have that going on, right? Although in Yerushalayim, the custom still is not to have live bands for this very reason, because of this very halacha. Commenting on that piece in the Shulchan Aruch, the Magen Avraham, just to keep in mind, Magen Avraham is living just right after the mid-1600s, right? So it's not so long, certainly not very long after Shulchan Aruch, and it's not so long ago. The Magen Avraham shows the sense that Jews had for long periods of time that music wasn't something that should be part of a Jewish life because of the loss of our Beit HaMikdash. The Magen Avraham says, Oh, Beit HaMikdash, he says, Afilu Mishenu Ragimim. He's talking about the Shulchan Aruch now. That the Ramah would be saying, in a Beit HaMikdash, in a house, a place where people have festivities, you can't have music there, even if you're not a Ragil, because that's a place where it's customary, and therefore you can't do it. That's the Magen Avraham. When it comes to singing orally with wine around, the Magen Avraham points out that in a tshuva, the Rebbe said, he thought actually, even without wine, you can't sing. You shouldn't be singing. So the Magen Avraham doesn't know why the Shulchan Aruch left that out. The Bach paskins that way, that even just singing, even somebody who's not used to singing a lot, he thinks they shouldn't do it. So the Bach really thinks that music wasn't supposed to be part of a Jewish existence, and that makes a problem, Magen Avraham points out, because there are women who sing while they work. And the Magen Avraham thinks that according to the Bach and the Rambam, it seems like it's a problem. Now, I'm going to think about that and suggest an idea to respond to that, but I want to point out this was the consensus of what's going on. Then when it comes to singing Divrei Tishbachot, the Magen Avraham points out that the Maharil thought that there's another problem with singing verses, which is not our problem today. It just came up, by the way. But that singing verses is always a problem because there's a whole Gemara that talks about the fact that when the Torah doesn't appreciate it when it's turned just into a song. And how it is that we sing psukim in general is another halakhic issue, not our halakhic issue. I just want to throw it out there to think about it in other contexts. And then when it comes to that, we do that. The Ramah says everything's okay for a chassid and kala. The Magen Avraham says it would be kol makom ein lismoach biyoter, but you shouldn't do too much of it, even at a wedding. Now that's, again, something that I don't know if in our times today people always keep in mind. The Magen Avraham was clear in his mind that all this, when the Ramah says you can ignore it for a wedding, the Magen Avraham is like, well, you can't ignore it for a wedding. You can't do too much of it. Another reminder of, or question to think about in terms of our practice. Mishneh Berurah there, just you know, hundreds of years later, the late 1800s, early 1900s, says that he thinks that he understands it, that when we say that with that oral singing with wine is a problem, that would be even somebody who's not used to it, right? The Ramah said only if you're used to singing, but not this one. This you can't do even if you're used to it. And therefore he says he thinks that you have to stop the people who sit and eat a meal, and outside wherever they're eating the meal, there are people standing there playing music. And they do this all the time. And you have music going on as you're playing to the Prima Gadim, actually. It's the Mishneh Berurah quoting the Prima Gadim because he thinks it's completely usher. So that would be seem to be a problem for all of our practices. So then I looked up in the Rav Moshe Feinstein, Igor Rav Moshe, and Rav Vad Yosef and Yechaved Da'at addressed this issue as well. And it's not their time today. It happened to be the children of Moshe's dated the 4th of Tammuz, so theoretically we could do it then, but I won't because I've done it for today. And I already did a 4th of Tammuz, I think, last year when we did the Shiurim. But his summary at the end of the Tshuva is that when it comes to just singing a cappella, right, without musical accompaniment, he thinks it's only prohibited in a Beit Mishteh, in a house of festivities, or at L'mishino Ragil, because almost all the Rishonim allow it. It's only the Rambam and the Tshuva who was against it. Notice that's a very different perspective than a Rav Volzhner had taken. But he says it's certainly appropriate for a Baal Nefesh to be machmir like the Rambam, and not to sing over wine, or even not over wine, because we don't have a base to make this. So the Bach Paskin that way, then if you can live up to this stringency, or most finding things, it would be a good idea to live up to this stringency. But it's for a Dvar Mitzvah, then it seems like it's okay. And he thinks that it would be any Dvar Mitzvah. Rav Moshe Feinstein says he thinks the example of a chatan and kala is not because weddings are so important, it's because it's an example. But it's any Dvar Mitzvah, right? But then he goes on, so any Dvar Mitzvah will be, Rav Yosef gives examples of Dvar Mitzvahs in history because he says much the same. And when he's giving examples of Dvar Mitzvahs, he says Bris Mila could then have you know, musical accompaniment, as could a pigeon, a ben, right? Or he says, O siyum masechta, O bar mitzvah. Or a bar mitzvah, or completing a tractate of learning of Talmud. So notice that he puts it to complete the check of the learning Talmud before the bar mitzvah in the list. It's like it's more obviously occasion of mitzvah. So that's all good. But Rav Moshe Feinstein then says, but at banquets that you make for some stuck up person, meaning like a shul dinner or a charity dinner or a charity occasion of some sort, he says the meal itself he doesn't think of as a mitzvah really. The meal itself is only to gather people to give tzedakah and to encourage them to give tzedakah. He thinks it's appropriate to be machmir and to not have a ban, although he says you don't have to stop people if they're going to have a ban. But and then when it comes to the radio, he says, he thinks just hearing somebody sing is okay, but if it's got music attached to it, then he thinks it's usher, and in sphere it's usher completely. So Rav Moshe Feinstein is not so far from Rav Osner in the sense that he thinks hearing music played with instruments over the radio is a problem. Yichavadat, Rav Vadya Yosef, thinks that when it comes to Shirei Kodesh, when it comes to songs, you know, using good holy words and holy ideas, so then he thinks on the radio, even if it has musical instruments, it's okay, but during sphere, it's not. But a simcha shel mitzvah, he goes on to say that. So they're not so far from Rav Vajda. Let's go back to Rav Vajda's tshuva, and then if we have time at the end, I'll throw in a little piece of my own. So in Chuchay Rav Levi, back in the tshuva, he says, "Michu akol panim elu hashomim zemer kodesh v'zemer mitzvah le'oir halavavos." If you're going to hear music played, right, or not music, if you're going to hear singing, and the singing is for the purpose of arousing people to feelings of Kedusha, of sanctity, and of service of Hashem, and especially during a wedding meal. So if there's no special prohibition, like in Yerushalayim Mitzvah, like in Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh, which is well known that they don't use live bands, so then he thinks there's room to say that it's okay. Or, Lemisha Shomea Lepakech Itzvono. Sheesh, let me get it too. So you have somebody who's depressed, who's really so sad that, like, it's an issue for him to be able to get his life together. So there he thinks that there's room to hear that it's okay, as already the Shimon Greenfeld, who was a Hungarian Rav, lived from 1860 to 1930, and he has a book called Shut Mahar Shag. So he also thinks that that music for that purpose could be okay. But then he says, it doesn't in any way obviously, this obviously means that doesn't give you any reason to think that you're allowed to learn how to play musical instruments, just to play musical instruments for us for the purpose of it. They go, and not only that, it gets worse. And this we get into the more Haredi version of the world, in the sense that it's also going to cause you to go places that's prohibited, because you'll come to a place to learn. You know, let's say your first lessons are at home. When the teacher comes to you, and the teacher is the same gender as you are, so that's not a problem. But eventually, you're going to go to a place, and it's going to be mixed, you know, mixed men and women, and you're going to have to sing aloud, or the girls will have to sing aloud. You're going to hear other women singing out loud. And he points out that there's a sefer called Yosef Ometz in the Halachos of Tisha B'Av, who complained about the fact that in Frankfurt, so this is, you know, a couple hundred years ago, in Frankfurt, they were teaching their daughters to play music, and he complained again, and he thought it was against the halacha. So he says, Rav Osher says, I can't get all of it, rid all of it once, but it would be great if people would listen to me and not violate these rules. But al kol panim chalila lachzik b'bayit haklei shir shekorim hakayom organ. Right, you can't have an organ in the house, which includes several different kinds of musical instruments, and that was very much against. People were very much against that. I think that's because of the reform issue. I think, but he doesn't make it clear here. But he says there's a strong tradition not having those. I think it's because the reform put those in shuls, and therefore became a symbol of reform Judaism to have an organ. And he says if it would only be that people would listen to what I'm saying and to the halacha. Because you want that everything in a home, in a Haredi home, and those who really fear Hashem should be just be halacha, according to Shulchan Aruch, and based on that, we'll get the Beit HaMikdash to be rebuilt, and we'll get all the tzimcha back that we're hoping for. So these, I think, it's a very strong tshuva, in the sense that, for all that it's Haredi, in the sense of not coming out of the world that I'm thinking about, and therefore raises issues that we in the world that I sort of mostly have spent most of my life in respond to differently. So, for example, the question of being involved in mixed seating occasions, weddings, not like Jewish things. Like you go to a place where there are men and women gathering together, the Haredi response is you really shouldn't do that. So if there's another response, that other response is not, well, you don't have to worry about it. That other response has to be, for all that it presents a challenge, the benefits outweigh the challenge. But here, when it comes to the musical instruments issue, the Rambam is fairly clear, and the Shulchan Aruch is fairly clear, and then he's got the rest of the Moshe says, if you're used to it, and he says, nowadays we're used to it. So I'm not one to respond to him, but I might suggest that at some points it can be that we would say that music takes on a different perspective or a different role in society than it once upon a time did, and therefore it might mean that the decree no longer applies, meaning, not that we're allowed to just say decrees don't apply on our own, that's a problem in halacha, that's a very complicated halacha question, we don't generally say, oh, that decree no longer applies because the reason went away. I mean it more like, you know, if we're talking about Tzvira, let's say, where you can or can't play music, an example might be those who say today that you can shave during Tzvira, you can shave for Shabbos during Tzvira, or if you shave every day, you can continue shaving every day, because then it's, what they're saying is that when the Gemara says you can't shave, it meant shaving in one perspective, one element, or one idea of shaving, and if that has changed as a cultural phenomenon, you're not addressing shaving anymore. So too, I would think that in a time when the only people who heard music regularly were kings and people like that, they were the ones for whom music was a problem because music was an expression of their difference from the rest of society, and it was a kind of a pleasure and a kind of a joy that nobody else had regularly. And if they heard it every once in a while, that was great, but it was a different great because it didn't become part of the fabric of their lives. But then once it becomes part of the fabric of everybody's lives, Rav Ozer says, us, everybody's like kings now, it's permitted for all of them. That would be true if the way to understand the Rama is that whenever the music was a regular part of your life, Chazal worried about it. But I wonder whether you might be able to suggest that Chazal meant, that the Rama understood it to mean, that if music is a part of a regular part of your life as an expression of your great wealth over others, then it's a problem because you're forgetting the Korban. And to me, it seems to fit the context of the things we do to forget the Korban, to mourn the Korban, to mourn the destruction. It seems to me those are things where we say you can't live your full ordinary life. I'm sorry, you can't live your full ordinary life and you can't live a life which is excessively happy. But if hearing, especially recorded music, is something that makes you not excessively happy, just sort of part of the background rhythm of your life, I wonder whether that is true. Whether or not I'm correct, and however one handles this question, I think it's an important and interesting tshuva by Shmuel Halevi Vosner. It's an important tshuva for the 4th of Sivan, raising important issues that we all have to think about, and that even though it clearly marks out some of the dividing lines between Haredi and non-Haredi, raises issues that even that certainly non-Haredi have to think about as well, because it's simanim it's halachic issues that are just out there in terms of listening to music and mourning the Beit HaMikdash and what Jews do or don't do about that. That's a responsibility for the 4th of Sivan. With thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Arons, David Hakazer, I bid you a good day.